Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed M. on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Again, today's date is September 25th, 2017. Broadcasting on this pretty cool day from North Carolina. Feels pretty good outside. I know there is a lot of terrible weather that is affecting people all over the world. Puerto Rico, has been totally destroyed by one of the hurricanes. There are so many hurricanes going on simultaneously, I can't keep up with them all, but our thoughts and prayers go out to the people in the Caribbean, as well as parts of the United States who have been severely impacted by these hurricanes. Now, I've been seeing a couple of articles, and I saw an article posted in BTR Community. Shout out to the members of BTR Community, a social media community that was set up for and by the listeners of Black Talk Radio. And I saw an article where it was talking about they had uncovered a huge ball of plastic that weighs tons. And they're saying that this popped up in the Arctic. I think it was near the North Pole in under the ice. And they're saying the melting ice is what's revealing all of this plastic. And I was reading that article, and they were saying about, just picture a dump truck full of plastic being dumped into the ocean every minute. And that is the kind of waste that we're putting into the ocean. And they're saying that, from what I was reading from the article, is that one of the things why this melting Arctic, whether we're talking about the North Pole or the South Pole, and you're talking about all of that ice and that white snow, and saying that it would reflect some of the heat away from the planet, and so it wouldn't be so hot all the time in terms of the temperature of the oceans and what have you. But now that they're melting, that is contributing to what is called global warming. And I know there's a lot of people, two camps. Some believe that global warming exists, man-made climate change. Others say, no, it don't exist. But I'm like this. You can't keep pouring pollution into the environment and think that there's not going to be any kind of adverse effects to that. It's just common sense that you can't poison water. You can't pollute the air and there not be negative impact. Now, whether or not all of this pollutants being pumped into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide and what have you, I can't say for certain. I'm not a scientist, but I do know it's got to be some kind of adverse impact to that. I mean, man has become technologically advanced, and what do they call it? I can't think of the term that they used it in terms of industrialized nations, but the industrial movement has been around for over 100 years, and there has just been tremendous amounts of pollution that has been put into the atmosphere by these inventions made by man. And so I can't call it. I do know that it just makes sense to me that you can't keep polluting the environment and think that it's not going to have an impact. Whether it's causing the climate change or not, I can't say for certain. But I do know these are unprecedented storms, and a lot of people are suffering. And to me, if you're going to prepare for this, you need to move out of those areas that are prone to this inclement weather, because it seems like it's only going to get worse. And then also I saw, I was watching something last night on one of the channels, and it was talking about how many of these developers are building homes in places that are prone to floods and what have you, but yet they put thousands of homes and therefore thousands of people into these areas that are naturally supposed to be flood zones and what have you, and that it's just not helping. It's not helping, and it's putting people in harm's way. So that's one of the stories that I was looking at over the weekend. I don't know why I even mentioned it. It's not even in my lineup of stories, but it was just on my mind today. During the second hour, I have a couple of news stories I do want to go over and share with you during this first hour. And as always, you are welcome to call in with your comments on these stories, any related news that you want to share. You can do that by giving us a call at 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Just hit star to put yourself in the caller's queue. I'll see you. Watch your background noise, please. Once I see you, we'll come to your comments. But I want to focus the second hour. I'm going to be talking a lot about what occurred over the weekend, and not just the weekend, but even going back to last week. But Donald Trump is going to war with pro athletes, and I'm loving it. I'm just loving the comments from the athletes towards Donald Trump. I love that Donald Trump is totally showing that he's a habitual lawbreaker as he continues to disregard federal law on influencing employment decisions. Again, this is against the law, man. You can't call on employers to fire people because you don't like the political or social stances that they're taking, but he can do what he want to do because who's going to prosecute him? We don't live in a nation with equal justice for all. There is no equal treatment under the law, and that includes prosecuting people who break the law. So I have no doubt that this man will not be prosecuted for this very serious federal law that includes a fine of over $10,000 as well as up to 9 years in prison. Now, that's very serious. Why would they put such a law on the books with such stiff penalties if this wasn't serious to the running of this country? And for the CEO of USA Inc. to blatantly disregard federal law just says to me that, hey, why should I respect federal law if he doesn't respect federal law? Okay, he's the one that took the oath to uphold the law and not break it. I didn't take any kind of oath like that. I mean, I took an oath in the military, but I've been out the military for close to 2 decades now. So, I love it. I love it because it just exposes, it continues to expose the corrupt system that we have that's still practicing slavery in order to target black people the most. They implement racist policies and target black people with them. So I'm definitely loving this. You got the NFL player union finally hitting back at the Trump administration and speaking of these players' constitutional rights as citizens of the United States. It's not them who's breaking any kind of laws or any kind of rules. And any kind of such rules, if the NFL did have one, would be unconstitutional. But they don't have one. So it's not the players that's doing anything wrong. It's Donald Trump that's doing something wrong. As I was watching some of the news over the weekend, I did notice from some of the news reports, and I took a screenshot of it. Ray Lewis, remember Colin Kaepernick critic Ray Lewis, and basically, I don't want to name call Ray Lewis, all right? But anyway, Ray Lewis took not one knee this past Sunday in solidarity with current Ravens players, including one of their leaders on defense, Terrell Suggs. But Ray Lewis took two knees. He took two knees. Now, I don't know if that's because he got bad knees and he couldn't get down on just one. He had to take two. I don't know. But it's good to see him take those two knees in solidarity despite his nonsense up until this point of what he's been saying about these protests, not just Colin Kaepernick, but protests that have occurred in Baltimore, which I don't know if Ray Lewis was born in that area, but he has certainly adopted it as his home. And the things that he was saying in wake of the uprising that occurred in Baltimore after the murder of Freddie Gray, or the manslaughter of Freddie Gray. I can't say they intentionally meant to kill him. I haven't seen any evidence, but it was still manslaughter, meaning that he didn't die on his own, and it was a result of his injuries that he suffered at the hands of Baltimore slave catchers. And Ray Lewis has been on the wrong side of this issue for quite some time, trying to play the middle at times, but also sounding like a proxy racist, talking about, what about black on black crime? And black on black crime don't exist. Crime is just crime. Also, again, I will be playing some clips. You got reactions from players across the NFL. He also attacked NBA players for not wanting to visit the White House. So he rescinded their invitation to the White House. I'm speaking of the Golden State Warriors, who won an NBA championship last year. And it has been customary, I think, since the 1960s, perhaps. I'm not real clear on it. For these teams to visit the White House after they win a championship. And so the Golden State Warriors have been debating among themselves whether they want to visit the White House with a white supremacist currently occupying the premises. And so Donald Trump got upset, started talking trash to them, and rescinded their invitation. This man is I tell you, man, I'd rather have him than Hillary Clinton in there. And so I also got a video I'll share. Again, I'm going to really tackle this during the second hour, but you also had NBA players and other celebrities reacting to Trump's attacks on professional athletes. Got a clip that I want to share also of Bob Costas, who is a longtime sports talk host, TV host, and he has some comments to say. He was on CNN the other day. I thought his comments were pretty interesting. I did disagree with some things he said about Colin Kaepernick, but that's okay. You know, he's entitled to his opinion. I don't think there is any perfect person who could be a spokesperson for these issues, as all people have flaws and shortcomings and what have you. So I don't agree with his comments on that, on Colin Kaepernick not being the ideal leader on these issues. Hey, he's the ideal leader because he is the one who stepped up. All right, he's the one who stepped up in the NFL. So yeah, he's the right person for the job because he is the one who took the initiative. And he's not, it's not like he's telling other people to participate. They are just coming out in solidarity this year after they saw that how he was mistreated. You also had some other stuff that was going on, and I'm gonna get into some of these news stories that happened. So the first story that I want to tackle, we'll talk about Donald Trump during the second hour and all the protests that occurred over the weekend. I don't even know if it's right to even call them protests. They're really just demonstrations. But there was some tragic news that I saw this morning coming out of Nashville, Tennessee, where you had what they're calling a mass shooting. I think it was like 7 people were injured and 1 person was killed. And I saw that story this morning, and immediately I thought about Dylann Roof. Also, I do remember reporting during that period when Dylann Roof did what he did, and then following the removal of the traitor's flag, the Confederate flag, the slaver's flag from the Capitol grounds, State House grounds of South Carolina, you start seeing churches being burnt down across the South. And I do recall reporting one church in Tennessee. I'm not sure if it was Nashville or not, but there was one church in Tennessee that somebody shot into the building while you had people in there. I think it occurred on a Wednesday. So that's the first thing that came to my mind when I read about this shooting at this Nashville church. But it turns out that the church was a mixed church, but predominantly white. And the shooter was a 25-year-old Emmanuel Kadiga Samson, who is a Sudanese national but a naturalized U.S. citizen. I don't have his entire backstory, but he was born in the Sudan. And, you know, Sudan has been in turmoil for quite some time, over a decade. You have a lot of stuff that's going on in that region of Africa, and that's where he's from. I'm not sure the occasion or how he came to the United States, but he is a U.S. citizen, and he's being charged with murder and multiple counts of attempted murder in the attack that killed a woman, and it left at least 7 other people injured. And this occurred at the Burnett Chapel Church of Christ in Antioch, a town just south of Nashville, Tennessee. So it actually didn't occur in Nashville, but just outside, a suburb, I imagine, a little town outside. Now, the thing that I've been seeing in relation to this story is reactionary white folks who are immediately calling for this person be charged with hate crimes, just like Dylann Roof. But let me tell you again, I don't believe in hate crimes of that legislation. I don't think it fully addresses the issue of white terrorism in this country, and that is the reason or the intent for the legislation to address white terrorism in this country, although it has been applied to non-white people in certain circumstances. So, but that's their immediate reaction. Is because this is a predominantly white church, I imagine the victims may predominantly be white. They have not said, and that because this person's skin color is black, they are automatically assuming that is racism involved in this. Well, you know, Sudan has been targeted by the Trump administration with his travel ban, and I understand there's a new travel ban out. I'll share that information with you later. The United States government has long been funding militant groups and trying to play both sides of the fence, supporting terrorism while claiming to be against terrorism in Africa. And we don't, it could have been a political reason. It could have been the same reason that young man shot up, and I think he was like Afghan. He was American citizen, but his parents was from Afghanistan. And the one that shot up that Florida gay club called the Pulse in Orlando, I believe that occurred in Orlando. He said the reason that he shot it up was not because he hated gay people, and everybody was trying to say, "Oh, this is a hate crime right here. He killing them because they gay." But that's not the reason that he gave. The reason that man gave was that the United States is bombing his country and killing a lot of people. Now, he, even though he was born here, it appears, and is a U.S. citizen, he still identifies his parents' homeland as his homeland. And so he said he committed that act because of U.S. foreign policy. Again, like I've said, I don't agree with attacks on civilians. If you're looking to move the United States political policies, move the needle either way, terrorism, I don't think, is going to be the answer to that. Killing civilians, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. So, I mean, perhaps they don't care because the United States kills civilians. I was just reading about in Iraq, they just killed 84 civilians. And so, you know, that tit for tat type thing, I can't call it really, but I just can't endorse just blind attacks on civilians that you don't know personally what they support, who they are, or anything of the sort. So I'm just saying, take a step back, white people, before you claim this has to do with racism. We don't know what this has to do with, as the suspect, Emmanuel Kidiga Sampson, has not given a reason. Now, he was shot. They don't know if he was shot himself in the face, but he was shot, and his injuries are not so serious that he's going to die. And so maybe once somebody asks him why he did it, we'll get some information on why he did it. And let's just say for argument's sake, he went up in there and he did it because it was a predominantly white church, and he only targeted white people, and he comes out and he says, because of their racism or whatnot, I'm targeting them because they white, and white people are the only ones that can be white supremacists, so I'm going to kill as many white supremacists as possible. Well, again, I'm not going to condone that sort of act, because you don't know. If you'd have ran up in a clubhouse of the Ku Klux Klan while they was in a meeting and you gunned them all down, I wouldn't have anything negative to say about that. But again, you know, I just can't endorse just walking up in the church and killing some folks. But let's just say that he killed them because they're white. Then I would say that is a reaction to white supremacy. White supremacy reproduces these reactions. You can't just keep oppressing people. You can't keep throwing people into slavery, shooting them down in the streets, practicing institutional racism on a global scale, and think that everybody's just going to be okay with that, or that their reaction to it is going to be a nonviolent one, which you prefer. While at the same time, you know, you're not calling out your own government for this blatant violence around the planet. So, you know, that is a developing story. So I'm not going to sit up here and make claims to something I just simply don't know, why this man decided to attack these people at this church. I don't know if he ever attended the church, if he was mistreated by them. I don't know if he was dating a woman that he killed and decided that, hey, I might well kill some more people since I'm in the process of killing folks. I don't know. And you don't know either. So let's just stop pretending like we know. All right. So some of these people are already just automatically coming out, including some of the authorities in that area are coming out and automatically saying, oh, this was a race-based attack. You don't know that. You just simply don't know. All right, next story that I want to share. 60 years on, it is the 60th anniversary of the integration of the Central, I think this was Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, by what's known as the Little Rock 9 60 years ago. What happened was after what was that famous decision, Brown versus the Board of Education. Now, again, I know the different viewpoints on the issue of so-called integration among black people, and some black people say, oh, we had everything we needed and we had the best and we had it going on, and I don't know why they would want to integrate with these people, and they always think the white man ISIS colder in them. That is not what happened. The lawsuit itself, Brown versus the Board of Education, was filed by one black family who lived in a school district, but their child could not attend that school because of racism, banning black people from that school. And they didn't want their daughter being bused all the way across town to another district. I think they said something like she would spend an hour or two traveling back and forth, and it made no sense when she had her own neighborhood school right in the same neighborhood where that family lived, where they paid taxes, where their taxes were going for that school. And they was like, no. And you know what? I don't see anything wrong with that. If I'm paying for something, I should have access to it. And a lot of people don't look at it that way. And what really the movement preceding that was about wasn't so much about integrating schools, but it was about funding schools, the black schools. So black people been paying taxes since the United States started levying taxes. Okay, we've been paying for this public infrastructure, for these public buildings, for so-called public education. But those black schools, many of them, these were buildings that weren't fit for anybody to be in these buildings. rats, roaches. Some of them didn't even have heat in them during the winter months, and definitely didn't have air conditioning during the summer months. And the black teachers weren't being paid the same as white teachers. And that's inequality. And that's what they were truly marching against. That is truly what they were fighting for, was for their tax dollars to be brought back to their communities to fund their schools and to pay their teachers an equal amount of pay as you were paying white teachers. And so, again, this narrative that comes from a certain sector of the black community that thinks it was about black people just want to go to school with white people, that's totally untrue. And then this notion about we had everything we needed. No, that's not true. Some black communities, like the one my mama grew up in, they had a very nice school. Okay, but you also had a lot of black businesses around here. You had black people who were doing financially a whole lot better than a lot of the other ones. We had a lot of black business owners around here as well. And they made sure that school that my mama went to, called Reed High, and made sure they had everything they needed. And that this was a building suited to educate children, meaning that it wasn't a building that should be condemned. But that was not the norm for every black community. Indeed, that was not the norm for most black communities in the United States. I mean, people acting like, again, that the people, the majority of the black people who were coming out of slavery, not talking about the ones that were free, that were never enslaved, but were still oppressed through institutional racism, but the ones that came out off these plantations after the Civil War, y'all act like they got reparations when they came out. Y'all act like they got the gold and the silver of their former enslavers, as that Bible story talks about the Hebrews. That did not happen. They didn't even get 40 acres in the mule, so where they get all this money to provide for everything that they needed? And we had all this great infrastructure of our own, and all these black businesses, factories and stuff, employing millions of black. That's not in reality. You're not living in reality. You've done no research. You're just listening to what one faction of the black community said as they was trying to get you to give them all your money and appoint themselves lords over you, and they weren't being honest. They totally mischaracterized what that whole movement was about. And so it was the system that countered by saying, you know what, we're not going to take the money that you give us in the form of taxes and redirect them back to your school so that you can have equal, you know, lodging or equal facilities with heating and central air and not being roach infested and all of that, and the wall and the roofs not caving in and leaking. I mean, that's still going on today in some schools in black communities in predominantly black areas. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because that's history is a pet peeve of mine. And I know there's a lot of disinformation that is put out to the black community as history. And it's just incorrect. It's incorrect. So anyway, I just wanted to get that background on my views on this whole period of black struggle back in the day. But I do want to play this clip again, looking back 60 years to the Little Rock Nine. So let's go ahead and cue that up. Take a listen.
The local newspaper, the Arkansas Gazette at that time, indicated that the Brown decision was going to change the face of the South forever. I remember those words. And I thought to myself, good, because I think the face of the South ought to change.
I will not force my people to integrate against their will.
The governor of the state, Orville Faubus, decided that he was going to use Central as his point of resistance. None of us of the Nine anticipated that the resistance would be as strong as it was. The night before we were to go to school, the governor called out the Arkansas National Guard, unbeknownst to us, And when we appeared at Central the first day,
sealed off,
the National Guard was there to bar our entrance and let white students go into the school. What it was like, it was rejection that I had never experienced like that. It seemed to me that if they were going to all of this trouble to keep me out, there was something bigger than my simply going to class. Only when we got home from school that day did we realize what an ordeal, personal ordeal, Elizabeth had gone through, and that she certainly faced more of the mob directly. I always applaud the fact that she was able to keep both her composure and try to figure out how to get out of that. We started school on the 25th of September.
President Eisenhower sends 500 troops of the 101st Airborne Division of the United States Army.
It was a terrific feeling that President of the United States would send troops to escort us into school. I didn't know what was going to happen after that. It was like going to war every day. You had students who tried to use as much verbiage as they could to intimidate us. We had threats and comments that, you know, we would be killed for all of us. We decided that this was a year that we were going to support each other. We were going to try to do as well as we could in our academic work. Some were a lot smarter than me. But I also was determined that this year I was going to graduate from Central. The principal of the school told me at one point along the way that I didn't have to come to the ceremony. They would mail me my diploma. And I thought, listen, I didn't go through all this to pass up the ceremony. Maybe the world thought that after Little Rock, everything is going to be fixed. And one of the important pieces, I'm sure I don't need it to remind anyone, that the history of slavery in this country makes it very difficult to overcome a lot of issues on race. We're a long way from being perfect, but we certainly are not what we were when I started out. I believe that our participation at Central is one of those many steps that's gone to change this country for the better.
And I echo those sentiments. I am not some ignorant person that's going to sit up here and say that my life is as bad, or I have had to suffer the indignities that black people had to suffer 60 years ago. No, we absolutely have made progress in this country. Do we have a long way to go? Yes, we do. But like he said, you know, slavery, he needs to acknowledge, and again, I'm not criticizing him. Maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't. But slavery was never abolished, number one. But he is correct in saying that when you have slavery, and slavery is not ancient history in this country, just two, maybe three to four generations ago, if even that many, maybe three generations. It's just 150 years ago. And for people to come out of slavery with nothing, no reparations, nothing, homeless, just traveling the road, trying to find their place in this country. Some did go to Africa, but the majority stayed here. And man, like, that's supposed to be all rectified within 150 years. Well, they could have if there was will to repair the victims of slavery, but there's been no will to do such, and therefore those inequities still exist. In fact, slavery still exists. So, you know, I salute that generation for doing what they did. Things are much better for me, and I certainly had more opportunity than what was afforded to my ancestors during certain periods. So, next story that I want to jump to. Otis says in the chat room, said his first 6 years of schooling, and Otis is an elder in the community. I don't mean that to say he old or anything, but he said his first 6 years of schooling never had a brand new book. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that. Now, my mom and them did say that that was an issue too. Is hand-me-down books and equipment and stuff. They had a nice building and what have you, but they were not giving brand new books issued at the time that they were issued to the other students, and just a lot of shortcomings, inequalities, and what have you. But again, the plan wasn't to integrate the schools. The plan was to get funding and all the proper resources for the black schools, and of course equal pay for the teachers. And the system countered that by doing what it did, shutting down black schools, which some of them schools needed to be shut down. Let's be honest, these buildings should have been condemned and shut down, but also firing black teachers. So, you know, this, you do something, the enemy does something, then you do something to counter what the enemy just done. That's how it works. That's just how it goes. So, you know, again, a shout out to all of those elders who stood on them battle lines, man, so that I could have a better experience. Again, still got a long way to go. Got to end slavery, but I'm certainly appreciative of those elders. Now, here is something that caught my eye in the area of health. So it's long been known to me that when these drug companies and these medical researchers and what have you, when they're coming up with procedures or medicine, that they're usually basing it off the biology of white people. And while people are people and humans are humans, there are some differences between the different races. One of the differences that I learned when I was in the military is that white people float better in water than black people do, because their muscle mass isn't as condensed and as heavy as the muscle mass of Afro-descendant people. So because we have more condensed muscle mass, it's not so easy for us to float. And so there are physiology differences between races. But when you have an industry that makes medicine based only off of white people, then there can be some issues with that medicine not, you know, being as effective on black people. So there's going to be a study, and I see we got a caller. Caller, hold on. Let me run this report first, and then I'll come to you and get your calls. But there is a massive study to end cookie cutter healthcare. And so let me just go ahead and run this from the Associated Press. And I think this is a good thing.
Erica Hager is getting her height
and out.
Other measurements.
Uncross, your legs uncrossed.
And blood pressure checked. Information that will be used in a massive new 10-year study by the National Institutes of Health called All of Us.
The All of Us study in the United States is a very bold, very large-scale effort to enroll 1 million Americans in a long-term prospective study of health and illness.
The project aims to end one-size-fits-all healthcare, helping researchers learn how to customize care to people's genes, environment, and lifestyle. Hager, a 29-year-old mother of two, was frustrated with the cookie-cutter care when she had gestational diabetes during her pregnancies.
It just felt like they were like, all right, this is what happens with everyone, so we're just going to prescribe that generalized, I guess, prescription for you instead of getting to know you, getting to know your history, and seeing how that might affect you.
The University of Pittsburgh is one of a select number of health facilities participating in the pilot phase of the study. Oncologists like Dr. Manzer Agha believe the study will help uncover more tailored treatments for patients.
It's going to tell us that treatment A works for patient A, but not necessarily for patient B. It helps us develop precision medicine and individualized therapy.
In addition to standard health checks, participants have to answer questionnaires about their health and behaviors. If they agree, their blood samples will be DNA tested. Some could be asked to wear sensors to record additional data. All the information will go into what's expected to be the largest database of its kind.
I think the information that the participant is providing will help scientists make discoveries that will impact potentially on their care, but also on the care of future generations of their children and their grandchildren.
So far, 2,500 people have given their blood and have gotten checked. If the pilot testing goes well, the NIH says open enrollment for anyone interested could begin in the spring. They even have a mobile unit to help spread the word in different communities. Researchers are seeking a highly diverse population, people from all walks of life.
There are populations that are underrepresented in research, so by having a very diverse population and acquiring information, we'll hopefully be able to reduce health disparities.
All right, I'm going to end that there. That's an Associated Press clip. And by the way, all of these stories that I'm sharing with you are linked up in my news thread for today in btrcommunity.com. We have a caller from the 561 area code. Thank you for hanging on patiently. What's your name? And go ahead with your question or comment.
My name is Joe.
Greetings, Joe.
Yes, sir. I love listening to your show. Awesome. Love the knowledge that you put out. There's just something that I do as the systematic racism. I have a question for you. What systems of racism is out there that isn't oppressing and suppressing Black people from moving forward? And also, whatever you're about to cite, what is that system doing to actually keep them down?
Okay, let me, and I think I recall your voice. I think we've had this conversation before. So your phone is kind of breaking up, but this is what I think your question was what system is in place that's keeping Black folks down? Is that what you said? That's correct. The system of slavery, okay? This system of government, all right? We have various different systems, but slavery was never abolished, and that's apparent by the 13th Amendment. We can look at statistical data related to slave catching in this modern period of slavery and human trafficking, and we can identify the most affected populations, although I will contend that slavery impacts us all, that slave catchers, while they kill Black people the most, they also kill white people, they kill Asians, they kill Polynesians, and what have you, and that this is all related to a system of slavery. That answer your question?
Rob, you're saying that there is slavery. There are slave catchers out there today catching Black people, and that's the reason why the Black community marriage rate is at an all-time low, that 75% of the children are born into single-parent homes, that the murder rate in the Black community is well over 90%. You're saying all of this is because there are slave catchers in the Black communities catching them and making them slaves?
You asked me a question. Now, you see, this is why I don't like people like you, because you try to put words into people's mouth. Now, I just said that slavery affects everybody, but it affects Black people the most. So then you go into this diatribe of citing right-wing talking points about statistical data that says that Black people are more criminal and what have you, when that's just simply not true, when you also had to take into...
I never said they were criminal.
Well, that's what you are insinuating when you say that their crime rate is higher than other communities.
No, I never said crime, sir. The murder rate. The murder rate.
Well, what is murder? Now we're playing games. What is murder if it's not crime? What is murder if it's not crime? What is murder? Is murder not a crime?
No. You're saying crime as an aspect as Black people burglarize more. Black people... they steal more. That part I know is not true. What I'm talking about is the murder rate in the Black community. I don't want to, you know, if, as you said, go off of right wing talking points. I'm talking about the murder rate.
Okay, so what does any of that have to do with what I've been talking about in reporting thus far? What prompted you to call in? Let me ask you that question. What prompted you to call in to ask me that question?
I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and also, I mean, you being an educated Black man, on what's going on in the NFL as today. My personal opinion, you know, me being, I'm Black and Cuban, I'm a minority just like you, a Mexican wife, I have two children, both, you know, minorities also, and I personally, my personal opinion, I do not agree with it. And I have been asking, and you're an you're an educated black man. I have been searching for someone to tell me, how is it more racist now than even not 30 years ago, but even when Obama was in office, there were more cop, you know, killings and whatnot. I need what has transpired that has brought forth this, you know, astronomical protest against.
So you say know, that you're African Cuban, right?
Or do you think it's just against Donald Trump personally? Is this a personal vendetta for the lost election?
All right. Thank you for your call. And I'll try to unpack some of what you just said here. Look, these protests just didn't start happening out of nowhere. People have been struggling against racism, white supremacy, terrorism in this country for hundreds of years. Just because there is a heightened period of awareness where you have high profile people calling it out and saying, hey, this is wrong. That we have all these people getting away with murder, even when they're being prosecuted, they're getting set free and what have you. You know, so no, this has nothing to do with no retaliation against Donald Trump. All right. It has nothing to do with that. Donald Trump is who he is. Okay. And so, you know, again, you're not even, you don't even identify as an African American, so I don't expect you to even know the African American experience, because you called in and identify as an Afro-Cuban. And I'm interested, not really, okay, but I'm wondering, what are you doing here and how did you get here? Okay, and why did you flee Cuba? Did you get put out like them racist white Cubans that got put out? Okay, who were mistreating poor people and black people on the island of Cuba. I mean, come on, dude. Who are you? I don't know who you are. I don't know what you represent, but I know you call in from time to time with these crazy-ass questions which seem to want to promote this ideal that racism is all in our minds and it doesn't exist and there's no slavery going on, and that what's the reason that black people are murdering other black people, and as if white people don't murder white people. I live in a predominantly white community, and let me tell you, the crime is off the chart, including murders. All right, so why you want to even colorize it just shows me where your mind is at, because the only ones who try to colorize crime are those who want to take shots at the black community and suggest that they're more criminal. And look, like the slave catcher or former slave catcher, since he resigned over the weekend, David Clark, former sheriff of Milwaukee County, who has several black bodies on his tab at that jail, killed by deputies and what have you. But you seem like you his type. You're his type of black person, a proxy racist who wants to argue with other black people and try to get us to prove something that we shouldn't have to prove when the proof is staring you right in the face. So, you know, I really don't have patience for people like you. I really don't. I just don't. And, you know, I don't care about your skin color. Just because you're black doesn't make you my brother. It just because the words that come out of your mouth shows me who you are a friend to, and it is certainly not my community. Otis, you have a question or a comment that you wanted to share?
I'm just going to chime in and tell the young man, I heard him call in and try to lead you down the path of the, quote, black-on-black crime. Here's a perfect example of how people don't understand how systemic racism works. The island of Puerto Rico right now is a U.S. territory. Do you think that little island is getting any kind of help from the economic community? Number one, it's already been under economic siege for over 20, 30 years. It's bankrupt to the point that even the electrical system is about to be bought out by private enterprise so they can profit off of the suffering of brown people. So when people like him call in and are naive to actually what the tentacles of white supremacy work on, I try to lead them to a path that they can understand it. Go look up the history of Puerto Rico, how debt has been folded into their future so they can't even pay for the interest rate over the next 3 to 4 decades. They'll never get out of debt to Wall Street. That is all part of the systemic oppression of black and brown people, along with the actual physical slavery of locking you up with no way out of a system that you don't even have to be guilty to be locked into because you can't afford bail or a decent lawyer. Don't fall for the sound good that you hear in the morality of what they shouldn't have done before they went to jail. That's not the truth. Start educating yourself.
I mean, it's not like on this station, and he's been aware of this station for quite some time. It's been some time since he last called in, but I know his type, man. And so all this week, or all last week, I should say, we have had conversations with members of Clear the Airways Project, National Black Leadership Alliance, addressing the violence in the music that's targeting our communities through these white-owned radio stations, and saying that this music has influence in creating crime in these communities. All right. And you know, that's scientific right there. That's not me just saying it, but media does have an influence. So, you know, what's the prop? Why aren't people calling out Clear Channel or Radio One or whatever company that owns a radio station that's playing murder music, that's playing music that promotes drug dealing, that promotes raping women through date rape drugs and what have you, that promotes selling drugs, that promote killing other black people? See, they call in and they want to argue with me, or they want to say, you know, well, why aren't you taking issue? That you don't know what I take issue with, or the things that I work on, or who I am associated with that are addressing those issues. But why is it that you call into here? Why don't you call McDonald's, the CEO of McDonald's, and ask them why they keep putting ads on killer radio stations that's promoting quote unquote black on black crime? Why don't you call the CEO of iHeartRadio and ask them what's the intent behind pushing all of this murder music out over the airways that violate community guidelines on obscene language on terrestrial radio? No, they want to ask me, a victim, you know. But I address those issues. I address those issues. But my main issue is slavery. And I don't color code it either. I don't think anybody should be a slave. None. No one. Are black people being targeted the most? Of course they are. It's part of eliminating our political power, because once you become convicted of a crime, not only do they put you into slavery, but they take away your right to vote, your right to bear arms, just a number of your constitutional rights. Even after you get out of slavery, you still don't, those rights aren't automatically restored to you. So it's also a political reason of why they target certain communities, because they don't want those people voting. All right. So those are my comments. You know, I didn't mean to entertain that person that long, but, you know, man, I mean, it says a lot to me that he's an Afro-Cuban. I mean, does he agree with the Trump administration's embargo on Cuba? Simply because the majority of the people in Cuba rose up against a very corrupt, puppet U.S. regime being run by Batista, who was disappearing people and killing people. And because the people said, you know what, we can't take this no more. We're going to rise up. We're going to seize control. And then we're going to implement a government for the people that we want to see. And in the United States then employs a international embargo to punish the people of Cuba, preventing them from having, you know, building materials, just all kind of stuff that the rest of the world has access to. But even though, because of this economic boycott, they have still made tremendous progress in the area of medicine, where they devote, it seems, most of their their resources. There are no homeless people in Cuba. There are no hungry people in Cuba. They may not have all the fancy toys and stuff that we have, but I would say their quality of life is far better than many people here in the United States. So, you know, you identify yourself as an Afro-Cuban. So what do you think about the United States mistreatment? Or are you one of those Afro-Cubans that want to come over here and prove yourself to be a good Negro under the system of racism and white supremacy and badmouth Cuba? So those are my thoughts on that. Hey, listen, I'm overdue for some music, and I'm just going to share some quick news headlines with you before we take our music break. Let me see. One of the other stories that I wanted to share with you, there was a concert in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend. Dave Matthews, Pharrell Williams, and Stevie Wonder performed along with some other artists, and they all took a knee and a firm stand against President Trump by kneeling during the Charlottesville benefit concert. And Pharrell was another one of those dudes I'm looking at with a side eye, who was talking about the new blacks and all this kind of stuff. But it seems like he's taking a step back and taking a knee in solidarity with those who are opposed to extrajudicial police violence and murders in this country, which again is all connected to 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Hey, Mr. Afro-Cuba, go read the U.S. Constitution and read the 13th Amendment, since you seem to question whether or not we got slave catchers out here. All right, another story. Justin Bieber says racism is more prevalent now, and he's willing to stand up for Black Lives Matter. That's not really what he said. Black Lives Matter does not just represent black people. They're not spokespersons for black people, although they address issues that impact black people. But there are black white people who primarily fund Black Lives Matter, the national organization, and they have plenty of white members. So, but Justin Bieber saying he's willing to stand up against racial injustice. Of course, not that long ago, he got called out for practicing racism using the N-word, and he apologized for that. And let's hope that he's being sincere and saying that he's now willing to stand up, because I see that racism is more prevalent than it's ever been during his lifetime and what have you. So, hey, it is what it is. He said what he said. Let's hope that he meant what he said, and that he will use his platform and his resources to stand up against racial injustice. This was a story that was shared with me over the weekend by L.A. Ramon in BTR community. He shared this with me over the weekend. Macklemore, who is a white rapper, said it's on white people to fix white supremacy. Now, I don't know why L.A. shared this with me, other than perhaps he knows I've been saying that over the past couple of weeks, and saying that it is primarily on white people to clean up this crime called white supremacy. It's a crime, it's terrorism, and to stand up against racism. And so, yeah, it's coming out their community primarily. It's their mothers, it's their fathers, it's their uncles and aunts, it's their grandparents, it's their brothers, it's their sisters, it's their cousins, it's their neighbors. And therefore, they are in a prime position to oppose racism, because a lot of times, you know, people have become good at hiding their racism, but they will let other white people know, or other white people can pick up on it, because they know some things that we don't know or we're not privy to. So I would say, just like Mr. Afro-Cuba wants to call in here and talk about some black on black crime and what about this and that in the black community, and well, what about the white community? This is a global crime we're talking about. What about them? Where are the calls for them to clean up their community and to stop committing crimes against humanity against non-white people. Where is it? So I'm glad. I've been calling for that for a couple of weeks. It is on them. I support Antifa or Antifa. Yeah, go out there and beat them white supremacists bloody, because they're not nonviolent. They're terrorists. And the United States government has failed to address these terrorists. And so somebody's got to address them. And I prefer it be white people to go out there in them streets and battle them white supremacists. Beat them bloody. All right. So I'm in solidarity with Malcolm Moore on that. It is on white people. You started white supremacy. It is because of you that it persists. And therefore, if you are not a white supremacist and you call yourself a good person, a quote unquote good white person, then, you know, put some action behind them words and stop looking the other way while you see racism being practiced on the job. While you see your family members engaged in this terrorism, it's on you. It's on you to stop. You on the front lines. You the first line defense against white supremacy. Now, I know, and it's to be expected, you're going to have some black people who are going to be skeptical of these comments, and that's healthy. I'm skeptical of everybody. I don't trust anyone. I really don't. I don't trust anyone. Well, let me restate that. I can count on one hand how many people I trust. And only a couple of them aren't related to me. So, you know, yeah, we should be skeptical when people say these sort of things. But at the same time, we should keep reminding them of what they said. And we still waiting on you to put some action behind them words. So what is Malcolm Moore going to do? What are you going to do, Malcolm Moore? We need more than just songs about white privilege. All right. We need some concrete action. You can take some of your millions and you could donate it to anti-racist organizations like the Black Talk Media Project. Certainly we'll put it to good use. Or you can come up with your own programs and foundations to address racism and white supremacy. Okay? So, yeah, I agree with him 100%. It is on, it should be on white people to fix white supremacy, because it emanates from their community. So do us all a favor and put an end to it. I mentioned earlier that Donald Trump had expanded his travel ban. He now has a travel ban that includes North Korea, Venezuela, and Chad have been added. Now, what? Why is he putting a travel ban on Venezuela? Is he using this travel ban as a political weapon to punish Venezuela, since they saying that they're no longer going to accept worthless Federal Reserve petrodollars for their oil, huh? And that they were going to take some kind of cryptocurrency or another, might have been a euro, I can't remember right now. Yeah, that's what I think is going on. Let's go ahead and run this clip from CGTN Africa as they discuss it.
U.S. President Donald Trump has expanded his so-called travel ban. 8 countries are now on the list, with the newest being the DPRK, Venezuela, and Chad. This was a result of a review after Trump's original travel bans were challenged in court. And that means 3 countries from Africa are now on that list. Sudan was on the previous list. It is now off. CGTN's Nina Maria Potts has more.
Well, the Trump administration has announced these new restrictions. That's now on visitors from 8 countries. To be clear, the expansion of this travel ban is an expansion of the existing travel ban, which was introduced at the beginning of the Trump presidency. It was deeply controversial, and it's still being played out in the legal courts, in the legal process. The 3 countries that have been added include Chad, Venezuela, and the DPRK. And in Venezuela's situation, the U.S. administration is targeting just the leadership and its family members. So very targeted travel ban, in a way perhaps that the original travel ban was not. The Trump administration is also pointing to the diversity of the countries that are now included. If you remember, there were scenes of chaos when the first travel ban was implemented, with even green card holders and visa holders being caught in the crosshairs. Some of them were unlucky enough to be out of the country at the time that it was rolled out. The Trump administration insisting that this is a diverse group of countries that it's targeting for security reasons. And by the way, they have dropped Sudan for exemplary information sharing. And they've done a review of Sudan and have dropped Sudan off the list. But the Trump administration saying that this was never about race and it was not an anti-Muslim ban.
Let's get you more reactions now from the West African region. And I'm joined from Lagos by CGTN's Deji Badmus. Deji, has there been a reaction on the U.S. travel ban from either Chad or the regional bloc, ECOWAS?
Not exactly, Beatrice. There hasn't been any reaction yet. I mean, Chad, the people of Chad would just be waking up to this story. It's still very early, so no doubt the government will want to meet. And I'm absolutely sure that there's going to be some kind of reaction in the coming hours or days, and we are also going to see some kind of reaction from ECOWAS. So it's quite too early. I mean, this executive order just came into force a few hours ago, don't forget.
Well, Sudan is off the list now, but Chad has been singled out. So why has Chad been singled out and not any of the other nations affected by Boko Haram?
Well, let's get something straight. I mean, from the wordings of the executive order now, the wordings especially on Chad, it's very clear that Chad was not included on the list just because of the activities of Boko Haram. So that is the reason why we can't say, Chad is specifically targeted because of the activities of Boko Haram. What the executive order says is that Chad has not been very cooperative when it comes to sharing terrorism-related and other public information. So basically, from my own understanding of the executive order, the wordings of the executive order, President Trump absolutely made it clear that Chad still remains an important partner in America's counterterrorism operation, but that Chad basically has not been fully cooperative when it comes to sharing information probably about some of its citizens involved in terrorism and all of that. And that is basically why this executive order, it's aimed at the citizens of Chad. Now, I mean, this suspension is basically for the B1, B2 visas. That's the business and tourism visas. So basically means for Chadian citizens who may be willing to travel to the United States of America for either business or tourism purposes, they would not be able to do so. But of course, the ban does not cover government officials. So,
all right, I'm gonna stop it there. Here's what I had to say to the issue of Chad allegedly not sharing counterterrorism information with the United States government. So I understand that, yes, the Trump administration is different than the Obama administration, but when we talk about the so-called war on terrorism, there's not much difference from one administration from the next. I mean, when George W. Bush first launched the war on terror, with the drone attacks, lots of civilian casualties, again, the issue of extrajudicial killings without a process of charging someone, convicting them of a crime in a trial, and then issuing the death penalty if it warrants the death penalty. No, the United States administrations have been acting as judge, jury, and executioner, which is not very democratic, as they would say. Not very democratic. But listen, all you need to do is look at Libya. Libya was at the forefront with Muammar Gaddafi and fighting terrorism in Africa. In fact, Libya was the first country to issue an international arrest warrant for Osama bin Laden because of his connections to bombings of embassies in African countries. He had put a lot of them terrorists in Libya in prison. And what happened during the Obama administration? Huh? What happened? They took the side of terrorists to overthrow Libya, which was at the forefront of fighting terrorism in Africa. Also, they could do what? Well, prevent Libya from launching a African currency called the gold dinar, which would have been for the entire continent of Africa, or at least those who are members of the African Union, which would get them off of the U.S. petrodollar or the French franc, the colonizers' currency. That was the reason that the French participated in the overthrow of Libya through NATO. The United States wanted to continue its attempts to overthrow the government of Syria, and they transferred weapons from Libyan weapons depots to those terrorists trying to overthrow Syria. So if I was any African leader or any leader anywhere in the world, I'd be very cautious of being in any kind of relationship in terms of the war on terror with the United States. Just again, look at what they did to Gaddafi in Libya. And today, terrorism is widespread in Libya, and they have even brought back slave markets. All right, so you know, Donald Trump again just willy-nilly abusing his power to just say, oh, these people can't come here. This is what this, if I was a Chad leader, you know what I'd do? I'd ban American citizens from coming to Chad. In fact, that's what I would like to see many of these African countries do, or any of these countries who are opposed to the policies of the U.S. government. How about, since Donald Trump is a blatant racist and everybody is pretty much acknowledging his racism, how about you issue a travel ban against U.S. Trump administration officials and ban them from coming to your countries? We won't likely see that happen because many of those countries are dependent on handouts from the U.S. government. That is how the U.S. government has undermined many of these nations' sovereignty, by getting them hooked on U.S. aid with strings attached. No, they ain't coming there to provide humanitarian relief because it's the right thing to do. No, they have a political economic agenda, and that aid is tied to that. So any leader in Africa that depends heavily on that aid, they won't be so quick to put a travel ban in kind against the United States. But that's what I would do. That's what justice calls for. All right, you want to play this game, Donald Trump? Then let's play this game. All right, I'm going to take a long overdue music break. I'm trying to still get my format down for this program. Again, we got lots of programming changes on the station, but I'm going to kick some music, and then we'll come back. I will get more into this Donald Trump war on professional athletes once again. You're listening to BTR News. I broadcast every Monday through Friday at 12 o'clock noon, running up until 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Be right back. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. That was Aura with Are You Single. That's one of my favorite tunes from back in the day, as I do listen to a lot of old school R&B and hip hop. I want to share this comment from the Uber Conference chat room that we have, uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. And going back to that story about Chad and them being part of the travel ban, and the Trump administration saying that they're not sharing information on so-called Chadians who may be involved in terrorism. Now, this kind of sheds some light on it. Otis shared the article from The Intercept. It's a 2016 article that says Obama authorized the largest drone base on the continent of Africa in central Chad. So again, perhaps the Chadians got a problem with the United States government killing its citizens without charging them, without giving them a trial, and just straight up murdering them by drones. Okay? And so perhaps Chad can close that drone base. That would be the right thing to do in retaliation for the United States keeping its citizens from coming here for tourism or for business. Hell, boycott Chad. Boycott the U.S. Boycott them is what I say. And kick that base out your country. Again, all we can do is speculate based off of the information at hand. And if that's why they're not giving them information, then I think that that's the right thing to do. I think if you're going to kill somebody, I'm talking about governments, it ought to be a trial. It ought to be that you have to charge these people. There should be a public airing of the evidence. These are supposed to be the bedrock principles upon which America stands, right? That's at least that's what they tell us, right? That in America, you know, you have a right to confront your accuser. You have a right to see the evidence against you, and you have a right to defend yourself in court against that evidence. How does the U.S. drone program jive with those so-called principles? So, yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Otis. It does, you know, broaden our view in terms of the information that may be connected to why they're making these sort of moves at the Trump administration. Now, like I said, I was going to get into this war that Donald Trump has with pro athletes and how he is just totally disregarding federal law on influencing private employment decisions by calling on NFL owners to fire those who don't participate in the national ritual, and that's all it is. It's a ritual of standing for the national anthem. Trump says, I wish NFL owners respected the U.S. flag. See, these are false equivalencies is what he's engaged in, but we know that he was in Alabama over the weekend, and here is part of what he had to say towards professional players.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired! You know, some owner's going to do that. He's going to say, that guy that disrespects our flag, he's fired. And that owner, they don't know it. They don't know it. They're friends of mine, many of them. They don't know it. They'll be the most popular person for a week. They'll be the most popular person in this country, because that's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything that we stand for. Okay.
All right, I'm gonna stop it there. Obviously, he's speaking to the choir. He's speaking to his fellow gang members who love their gang colors and what have you. You know, this whole thing about not standing for the flag is disrespecting the flag. Who gives a damn about that flag? I don't give a damn about that flag. And actually, my mother over the weekend told me she was going to burn hers. Now, my mom used to fly that flag from her house starting when I went in the U.S. military, because she was so proud of me, like many parents are when you have a child who joins the service. And we know how we're told that they protect our liberties and our freedoms, and all of that is a bunch of nonsense, which I discovered in my 6 years in the United States Army. But she kind of shocked me when she said, I'm gonna burn that flag. That Donald Trump is just ridiculous And I'm a, you know, that's an inanimate piece of cloth. Who cares? I care more about people than I care about a flag. And I'm going to burn my flag. That's my mama talking. I was kind of like, wow, Trump done pissed her off, really? You know, but no, that flag is not disrespecting the troops. It's not disrespecting me as a veteran. If we were truly fighting for your freedom, then wouldn't those freedoms include freedom of speech and freedom not to participate in a nationalistic ritual of standing up for a flag or saluting a flag or what have you? And he is blatantly, somebody need to send a memo or something to Robert Mueller and tell him to investigate Donald Trump for violating the federal law that essentially states that certain government employees, including the president, vice president, and any other executive branch employee, are prohibited from influencing the employment decisions or practices of a private entity solely on the basis of partisan political affiliation. When they put this law on the books, they took it so serious that the punishment can lead to a fine of over $10,000 and imprisonment up to 15 years and possibly both, and could lead to disqualification from holding any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. That's an article. This is something I became aware of last week when we were reporting on the Jemele Hill story, where you had Sarah Huckabee Sanders, White House press secretary, say that ESPN should fire Jemele Hill for daring to call Donald Trump a white supremacist who has surrounded himself by white supremacists. And she said that was a fireable offense. No, what you did is an offense that is punishable by up to 15 years in prison. You are the lawbreakers in this regard. These people aren't breaking any law. They're doing what the Constitution, not that they need the Constitution to give them a right of self-determination, but they have determined that they're going to use their First Amendment speech rights to not stand and take a knee in order to call out the injustices that occur behind their being more patriotic than these fools shouting USA, chanting like a bunch of brainwashed little children or something. And I was one of them back in the day. I wasn't all into the USA chant, but I had my red, white, and blue apparel. I would put my hand over my heart for the national anthem. It was programmed into me. It's programmed into all of us. But some of us wake up and like Colin Kaepernick, and we say, you know what? That flag doesn't represent everything that they say it represents. And it has a history of practicing slavery, engaging in human trafficking, and mass murder and land theft of Native Americans. So, you know, and it still stands for such today. Well, finally, the NFL union, again, some people have tried to compare these players to slaves, which I don't agree with. If an NFL player is a slave for getting paid millions of dollars for playing a game, then you a slave for getting paid how much ever you getting paid working for whoever you working for. We can say you a slave too. So I don't buy into that analogy of comparing professional athletes to slaves, but it seems to me there a lot of them are standing up right about now saying we are not slaves, that we have rights, and we will exercise our rights. And y'all picked on Colin Kaepernick last year. He was out there largely by himself, but you know what? We should have had his back. We can't go turn back the hands of time, but what we can do moving forward is show our solidarity with him and with the people on the issue of slave catcher violence in this country. This article is coming to you from The Hill. It says the head of the NFL Players Association, the union representing professional football players, said Saturday that the union will never back down from supporting players' right to protest. The statement follows President Trump saying Friday night that people should pick up and leave NFL games if players kneel as a form of protest during the national anthem. Well, guess what, Donald Trump? Many people have already said boycott the NFL, don't watch it on TV, don't attend the game. So you're a little late in calling for a boycott. He could just be trying to confuse people as to why we're seeing empty seats in the stands, to make you think it's because the players are taking a knee during the playing of the national anthem, which is really nothing but a military recruitment of psyops. So let me get back to the article. Whether or not NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and the owners will speak for themselves about their views on players' rights and their commitment to player safety remains to be seen. This union, however, will never back down when it comes to protecting the constitutional rights of our players as citizens, as well as their safety as men who compete in a game that exposes them to great risks, he continued. This is Damari Smith, who is the executive director of the NFL Players Association. All right, so, you know, Donald Trump has also been making ridiculous comments about they're messing up the game, saying if you hit too hard, 15 yards, throw them out the game, they're ruining the game. This guy, again, he has the mind of a freaking child, a very dangerous child, a dangerous child with lots of money. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. And so, I mean, it just goes to show his immaturity where he's talking about, oh, they're ruining the game of football, looking out for the safety of these players and not allowing them to hit each other in the head and break each other's legs and all of that. This man is a man. He's a joke, and not a very funny joke at all. This is ridiculous. So, shout out to the NFL Players Association for doing what it's supposed to do, its job in protecting the rights of players, because they're men first. They're human beings first. They have rights. Then they are citizens of the United States and they have rights, according to the Constitution, even though I don't hang any kind of rights I have on that document. But that's what the document says, right? It's supposed to be about so much freedom and liberty, except when it comes to black football players or other football players taking a knee during the national anthem. Then, oh, freedom and liberty, what's that? We have no idea what that is. You have the freedom to do what we tell you is okay for you to do, is the freedom that these people are talking about. So NFL players have been reacting across the country. Here's a clip from Al Jazeera. Let me go ahead and cue that up for you. Get some of these comments from some of these players as they react.
NFL players taking a stand, some by taking a knee, others by sitting while the national anthem played, or by raising a fist. It was a scene repeated at 14 games right across the United States and London. They were responding to comments made by President Trump on Friday night, attacking players who had knelt over the past year to protest racial inequality, a gesture started by Colin Kaepernick.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a the field right now, out, he's fired.
The Seattle Seahawks and Tennessee Titans chose to stay in the locker room while the national anthem played, as did the Pittsburgh Steelers, with the exception of one player, Alejandro Villanueva, an Army veteran. Elsewhere, other players chose to lock arms together in solidarity.
It's beyond politics. It's about being a human being and having dignity and compassion for other human beings, regardless of their race and their gender.
But if the protest becomes that we're going to sit down or kneel or not show respect to the flag of the United States of America and everything that it symbolizes and everything that it stands for and everything our country has been through to get to this point, I do not agree with that.
Reactions by supporters across the U.S. were also divided.
I think our flag represents the services that our military fights for our freedoms, and I just think it's completely disrespectful that they're kneeling for that.
I think they should be suspended at a certain time.
And they are exercising their right of free speech. I mean, that's the First Amendment, and we've always had that right. I don't think the president should actually be getting involved in saying that.
He has a one-sided stance. He's not looking at the issues that arose before the kneeling started, which is what we are kneeling for.
Trump.
All right, I'm going to stop that right there. Again, man, I was about to say a cuss word. Drew Brees, kiss my ass. And that's from a U.S. veteran of a foreign war, the Gulf War. Kiss my ass. All right, come on, man. Stop it with the programming. Does not disrespect anybody. In fact, all they're doing is expressing those freedoms that y'all say that soldiers are fighting for and securing for us and everything what America stands for. Well, what does America stand for? In your mind, it stands for something different than other people's mind. In my mind, it stands for a country that still practices slavery and constitutionalized it and lying to people saying that they abolished it when all they did was move it from the plantation to the prison and then release the people right back out to the plantation. And this goes on to this day. The United States has the largest prison population on the entire planet. People in China got more freedom than people in the United States, if we want to judge it by the prison population. And the vast majority of these people who are in prison in the United States aren't in prison because they have committed crimes against other individuals. They are in prison because of victimless crimes. And then for all these people to talk about how much they support the troops and all, then why are our troops killing themselves at a rate of 8 to 8 a day? 8 veterans are killing themselves. Not allowed to treat their PTSD with cannabis, which the United Nations says is an essential plant to health and nutrition. I wrote an article 2 years ago pointing out that you got almost 1 million veterans of the U.S. military in prison as prison slaves. So don't tell me about how it disrespects the troops and what this flag represents. That flag is being made by prison slaves in California, I know for sure. After you had U.S. Senator Kamala Harris visit a women's prison and try to act like, oh, the prison is about rehabilitating people and providing them with valuable job skills. And then when they get out, they can't get a job because they got that felony slave status. But when she visited that prison, it mentioned in an article that they made U.S. flags in that prison. So the flag is even being made by modern day slaves. See, it's people like Drew Brees that don't want to acknowledge that we have a long way to go in this country in terms of recognizing human rights. Stop acting like little brainwashed children and think for yourselves. And anybody who thinks this isn't about racism on Donald Trump's part, wake up. In fact, that is what one writer believes. And I know we're coming close to the end of the program. Before I go into this next article, let me go to the telephone lines. It looks like we got Brother Jerry joining us on BTR News today. Is that you, Brother Jerry? And go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, it's me, Scott. How you doing today?
I'm doing the best I can, brother. How about yourself?
I'm still learning. I just wanted to make a real quick point. I know it's late in the broadcast. For the guy, the Afro-Cuban, I noticed just the same, like you said, you have these people who bring up this 90% crime rate. I noticed he didn't say nothing about the 87 to 89% crime rate on the on behalf of the white population. Not to mention the huge number that they outnumber us by a huge margin. So they have the most crime overall. Not to mention overall in the world. They always seem to leave that fact out. Another thing with this with the doctors and stuff trying to, I think that would be great as far as them diversifying the treatments, but this just seems like the same old from where they try to help, they so-called are helping black and brown people and end up giving us some type of disease that we ain't never seen before with this quote-unquote help that they're giving out. So I think that's something to be skeptical of.
I would agree.
With everything else. And one more thing before I go, Scotty, you know, as far as the, this Kaepernick thing and the NFL football, these people, although they are doing whatever they consider to be their part, we always got to realize that we take whatever they're doing, but be sure not to let them cross our minds with why we're doing it and what type of outcome we're looking for. Because they're not doing it to help us first and foremost, and we always got to remember that these owners are standing with their players not because they believe in the injustices, but because they know they need these players
right.
to continue getting their trillions.
Right.
So we have to be aware of all of these things and take advantage of them where we can, but not to get sucked in by the lies that they're telling to keep us comfortable. So I just wanted to add that real quick, and I'm gonna get out your way, Scotty. Peace. Thank you.
All right, peace, Brother Jerry. And yeah, we should be skeptical of medical studies, and if you're going to participate, make sure you do your due diligence and research it. And for those who think that that's crazy talk or whatever, well, again, if we look at the history of the United States and we see that they have conducted medical experiments on non-white people, primarily black people in this country, yeah, we should be cognizant of that history and don't think that history can't repeat itself, because often it does. So very valid point on that health story. I do think, though, it is, if this is an all, let's say, an honest effort to provide better health care treatment for non-white people, it is a fact that most of these drugs and treatments are developed using white patients as their baseline. And again, there are physical differences between human beings and what have you. And I talked about, you know, even using muscle mass. Black people's muscle mass is much heavier than white people's muscle mass. So that's a physical difference right there that we know exists. So, yeah, I do think that the health care has been set up to focus on getting white people healthy and not necessarily black people. So if this is an honest effort to address these disparities in providing treatments, then I'm all for it. But at the same time, I also have to be cognizant of the history in this country of experimenting on black bodies. All right. One of the things my mother had brought up that Jerry just brought up is that these owners who are backing their players. You even had Robert Kraft, who is a good friend of Donald Trump, say that Donald Trump went too far and that he supports his players' rights. Jerry hit it dead on the nail, hit the head of the nail with the hammer, just as my mother did on Saturday when she said they just concerned about losing their billions of dollars that these black players bring in revenue. And what have you. And it is about time that black people use their economic power collectively to address some of these issues. And it's a shame that this didn't happen widespread as it is in the NFL now when Colin Kaepernick was doing it last year, because then you would have been sending, it would have just been better to do it at that time and show your strength and solidarity when it was going on last year. But we'll take this year as well. So yeah, I will acknowledge those points that probably the NFL owners don't have any other choice but to back their players, especially when the leagues are predominantly black. Alright so Donald Trump also rescinded an invitation to the Golden State Warriors At a time when many of these people are telling athletes to stick to sports as if they're not human beings, as if they don't come out of these communities that are being preyed upon, as if they don't have family members, in modern day slavery and human trafficking and what have you, they should just stick to playing sports, you know. So that's not happening right now, and a lot of people mad about that. And Donald Trump has rescinded the invitation that was extended to the Golden State Warriors. But mind you, the Golden State Warriors had publicly stated that they're still debating on whether or not they want to visit that White House built by victims of slavery, currently occupied by a person who by most accounts is a white supremacist. All right. So, but you, this has jumped from the NFL to the NBA now. And now you also got other celebrities, who are chiming in. And I'm just going to roll this clip of different celebrities and NBA players chiming in on Trump's attacks on NFL players and also on, the Golden State Warriors.
You know, you just, you look at him. Kind of asking, you know, the NFL owners to get rid of players off the field because they're, you know, exercising their rights, and that's not right. And then, you know, when I wake up, I see that, you know, a colleague of mine has been uninvited of something that he said he didn't even want to go to in the first place, you know, to the White House. You know, that's just something I can't stand for, man. And we got, you know, Jameel Hill and Colin Kaepernick and, you know, all these people are speaking up, and, you know, it's for the greater cause. It's for us to all come together. It's not about a division. It's not about dividing. We as American people need to actually just come together even more stronger, man, because this is a very critical time, and me being in the position I am, I had to voice this to y'all. So love y'all, man.
Trump, you dumb motherfucker. You're talking shit about the Currys. Everybody loves the Currys. Aisha Curry, Riley Curry, Seth Curry, Del Curry, even the pretty ass moms. You dumb motherfucker. Don't you even know who the Currys are? That's like talking shit about Mickey Mouse. You took away his invitation to the White House to come meet you? Motherfucker, no one from the NBA is fucking with you. KD, LeBron, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Yao Ming, Larry Bird, nobody is coming to fuck with you, man. No one wants to meet your ass. And then you was talking shit about Kaepernick, saying, get that son of a bitch off the field. No, you fat motherfucker. Get that son of a bitch out of the motherfucking White House. Get him the fuck out. So now what's going to happen is we're going to take a knee to you, you bloated motherfucker, you. You have any idea how uncomfortable this is for a 47-year-old Jewish man with a bad back and shin splints? We taking a knee to you, motherfucker.
I just want to send some blessings and also, you know, some support to all the players in the NFL. You know, my message to y'all, even though you ain't asking, so please receive it because I rarely give them in this way. Y'all got a chance to do something really, 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 really great tomorrow. If y'all do whatever you do in unity, you can't be stopped. Just do the math, man. Do the math. Stick together. Stand up for each other. Ride with each other. Because believe me, we all we got. And it has nothing to do with football or business. Y'all are our stars. Y'all represent us. Y'all are our strong heroes. Let's show that strength, please.
And had no idea what they were talking about. I hadn't seen social media. And it was kind of applauding me for kind of sticking to my own beliefs about the whole situation. And from there, I kind of opened up Twitter, saw what he said, and it's kind of crazy because knew going into it today was a big opportunity for us as a team and organization to kind of talk about what the situation was. And like we've all said all summer, or you know, Bob said it, Joe said it, Coach Kerr said it, we were going to talk about it as a team today. It's kind of funny that that tweet was sent before we had a chance to get together the team, so it is what it is. My stance is the same as it was yesterday, and even kind of cemented even further about how things have, in our country have gone, especially with him, you know, representing us, and for me, not in, in a very damaging way, but you know, we have an opportunity still in February to figure out what we're going to do to celebrate the championship, and that's what this is about. That's why we're having this conversation, because we won a championship, and that's the position we're in, and we want to take that, you know, advantage, take advantage of that opportunity, and we will.
What was your first thought when you read that?
You see
the president calling out your name?
It's kind of, I mean, it's surreal, to be honest. I mean, just, I don't know, you know, why he feels the need to target certain individuals, other, you know, rather than others. I have an idea of why, but it's kind of a, it's just kind of beneath, I think, a leader of a country to go that route. It's not what leaders do. So, like I said, we have amazing people in this league.
You a big badass, huh? You want to get in Alabama. You want to tweet. You want to talk about Steph Curry. Steph fucking Curry, the biggest gentleman in the NBA. You want to bully fucking Steph Curry. You didn't want to choose none of them real niggas in the NBA. Why you didn't choose Draymond Green's ugly ass, huh? Huh? He would have bit your ass, that's why. J.R. Smith is a fucking criminal. Why you didn't talk about him? But you want to talk about the Currys, the nicest people in the fucking planet, because you a punk, that's why. And you going to uninvite them to the White House? How are you going to uninvite some people to some shit they didn't even want to go in the first place, huh? That's like me uninviting Rihanna to fucking me. Like, I even had the opportunity in the first place. You look dumb. You need to stay your ass in the White House and keep doing your Cheeto vitamin C orange shit and just stop fucking everything up. Stay off Twitter. Log the fuck off. Throw your phone away. Secret Service, you're not doing your job, because she ain't supposed to stay secret and serve the fucking country with your dumb ass. And remember, fucking Trump, I personally tell you, you're fired with your dumb ass.
Steph Curry, President Donald Trump said it's a privilege to go to the White House. Is there a reason you don't want to go?
I told Donald Trump, fuck you, I don't want to go, you know. I mean, the rest of the team feels the same way as I do, especially my nigga Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. You know, they don't want to go, so we ain't going to go. Fuck it.
All right, we're going to stop it there, as we are about to run out of time. So you just heard from a number of NBA players, athletes, celebrities as well. Even had P. Diddy in there telling the NFL players to stick together, that, you know, with unity, then they can't just single one of you out like they did Colin Kaepernick last year. So Donald Trump is, again, I would rather have him as CEO of USA Inc. instead of Hillary Clinton, because if Hillary Clinton was in there, then it'd be like no focus on racism, no focus on white supremacy, no focus on any element of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. It would be none. And they really, why are they upset with these athletes so much? Because of the influence that these athletes have. I've shared stories over the years, like even high school students last year didn't want to stand for the anthem, didn't stand for the anthem in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick on the issue of these extrajudicial murders of Americans by these slave catcher cops out here. So they can influence a lot of young people to start taking a deeper look at the country in which they live, and if this is really representative of the ideal democracy. Do we really truly all have liberty and freedom, or are these just slogans and talking points and what have you? All right. So that's why they coming out. That's why people like Donald Trump coming out so hard against these athletes and trying to turn it on them and away from the issues of which they are protesting and demonstrating. All right. So that is my program for today. I was kind of disjointed today. Wasn't very organized, but we got all the news stories out there to you. Thanks for the information that was shared with us in the chat room and from our callers. I ain't talking about you, Afro-Cuba. Oh, man, you got problems, man. You need some help for real. On air is not the time to have these conversations. I'll talk to you, but not on air. Not on air, because I'm not about to give you a platform to push anti-black propaganda. And maybe, you know, it's a mental issue with you, and we can help you. But otherwise, listen, they still practicing slavery. That's evident by the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. It's not because I say they practicing slavery. It's because that's what the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, says that they're practicing. And so if you are truly interested in ending slavery, you're going to have to pick a lane. You're going to have to use your talents, your resources to attack this system in whatever way you deem best. Nobody can make that decision or determination for you. That is a personal decision. But if you want it to end, you're going to have to do something. It's not going to come about on its own. All right. This is a uninterrupted institution, slavery, that is, that has been ongoing for close to 500 years on this continent, including since the United States became a country. So when you recognize this war that is being waged on this land, perhaps you will develop some skills so that you don't become a casualty. Of course, there's no guarantees, because in war, you're going to have casualties, but that should not deter you. Only cowards are deterred from doing what you know you ought to do. All right. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there. This is Scotty. I'm out. Hello, this is Scotty Reed, and thank you for listening to this podcast and sharing it with others. Please consider making a donation to the U.S.-based nonprofit media organization, Black Talk Media Project, in support of its efforts to elevate independent black voices. You can also support the work by joining the network's social media community, BTR Community, for just $24 a year. Black Talk Media Project is leading the way in the production of grassroots black media.